Welcome to Ask Dr. Julie Hanks, a safe place for healing conversations that educate and empower you to prioritize your dreams, revolutionize your family, and personalize your faith. I'm your host, Dr. Julie Hanks, a psychotherapist and coach offering online courses and programs to help women all over the world heal themselves and their relationships. Join me here every week as I coach a listener through a specific challenge and empower them with tools to find healing. Hello, friends. I am so excited about this live tonight. Thank you so much for joining me. We are going to be talking about healing from purity culture with Dr. Camden Morganti. Well, thank you so much for taking time to talk with me tonight.
Yeah, and thank you for inviting me. It's nice to finally meet you.
I know. We have a lot in common, it seems.
Yes.
So we'll get into that. But let me introduce Dr. Camden. She's a licensed clinical psychologist and former college professor, and she writes and speaks about Christianity, psychology, gender equality, and egalitarianism, which are kind of like right aligned with a lot of what I talk about. Uh-huh. You're working on a book, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Based on myths of purity culture. So you'll have to go follow Dr. Camden here on Instagram and make sure you're on her list to get her book when it comes out. So I can't wait. I'll be one of the first ones.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I'm very early in the process, still finishing up my book proposal, but I do have a literary agent and that's been a big step. And so the next step is just to finish this proposal and get a book contract and finally you hit the ground with writing for that. So
yes. And you are in Knoxville, Tennessee.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Wonderful. And you've also published for the Biblical Equality blog, Mutuality. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Yeah. Christians for Biblical Equality. It's an egalitarian organization.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. You say egalitarian. I say partnership family.
Yes.
Same thing. Uh-huh. It's the same thing. So let's first start out by defining purity culture. How do you define it?
So when people think of purity culture, they think, is this the biblical teaching or the belief of abstinence before marriage? But purity culture was so much broader than that. It was not just the teaching, but it was the methods of that teaching and all of the cultural artifacts that went along with it. I come from an evangelical Christian background, so Protestant Christianity, and it was hugely emphasized towards the late 1990s and the early 2000s, which is when I was a teenager and getting my sex ed or lack thereof. And a lot of the emphasis was just on purity is a virtue just for women. That's something that we have to uphold and really protect and guard, that men are all sexual and are going to lust, and it's up to women to put up the boundaries for that. And along with that came things like promise or purity rings, which I had one of those, or making a pledge to remain abstinent until marriage. And some people even went so far as to have purity balls, like dances where their fathers agreed to protect their purity until they were married. That did happen to me, but just, you can hear there's a lot of roots of patriarchy in it too. And I think the intentions were often good, sometimes good, but the methods and the shame that it has caused this generation of women and men has just been way beyond what was expected, I think.
So what are some of the examples of the impact of purity culture on, let's start with women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I started recognizing the problems with purity culture. Like for a long time, I was a big proponent of purity culture. Like I really bought into it, like full force, like bought into it and preached it even at like when I was in college and a young adult. And then I got married, when I was almost 30. And after I got married, some other people like on the internet started talking about purity culture a little bit. And I started to see there are problems with this. And I'm a therapist, and now in the last year, I've been doing coaching on purity culture recovery. And I've been a therapist for over 10 years, but I've been doing the coaching for a year. And so I see in my practice that it causes a lot of problems in mainly three areas, our relationships, our faith, and our sexuality. And I've experienced a lot of those problems myself. And so that's where my writing and speaking has come in from. First, it started from my own personal experience, but then it's also bloomed into this professional experience I've seen in those three areas.
So can you give us examples of like, what's a relationship symptom that you see in your practice related to purity culture?
Well, I think the relationship issues I see are also related to patriarchal gender roles of women just not feeling like they have a voice or they have a say, or really internalizing what I call the gatekeeper's myth, that women are the gatekeepers of men's sexuality, that men can't control themselves, and that women always have to be sexually available to their husbands and giving their husbands sex, or else their husbands might look at porn or cheat or stray in some way. And so that causes a lot of problems in the relationship, just this inequality, but then it also spills over into their sexual relationship. So problems with low sex drive or sexual pain, or just not experiencing sexual pleasure, not having orgasms, not enjoying it, not feeling intimate and connected because you feel like it's just a duty. So those would be some examples of the problems in relationships and sexuality for married people, but also in single people. I see, like, am I even sexual? Like, am I allowed to have a sexuality if I'm single? Or not knowing how to do dating relationships. I'm seeing that a lot in my coaching now, is like not knowing how to date, because a lot of the young women that I'm coaching are like late 20s or in their 30s or even into their 40s. And so purity culture didn't work for them. They're still single and they're not sure how to date because they don't really want to do like the world's like hookups and hookup culture and things like that. But yet purity culture didn't work. So they're not sure what the rules are anymore. So those would be some examples in those two areas. And then for faith, I just see like a lot of what's called religious or faith deconstruction, of people starting to look at their faith and their beliefs and saying like, these didn't work for me. These teachings didn't work for me. And I'm not even sure that they're true or biblical. And so all of a sudden I'm pulling out that thread and it unravels the whole thread of my faith and can really be disillusioning for people.
So say more about that. So how does purity culture kind of lead? So they start asking what, and then they discover what.
Yeah. So this was part of my experience was, like I said, I was a big proponent of purity culture and really believed in it, and believed in what I called the fairy tale myth, that as long as I stayed pure and I followed the rules, that I was going to be blessed with a marriage at a young age and like a family and just this fairy tale ending. And I dated someone with the intention of getting married and dated for a long time. And then we broke up. And after that, I was really devastated to be single and just devastated emotionally and relationally. But then it also devastated my faith because I felt like these false promises that I was given from purity culture did not happen, did not come true for me. And it almost became like, well, what's the point of this if I'm not going to get the rewards? Or purity had been such a marker of my faith and of what I considered myself as a good Christian and good Christian woman, that it was like, almost, what's the point of my whole faith if God's not going to give me this husband that I deserve? So that was the attitude I had. And that led to struggling for several years with my faith and just needing to be rooted in a deeper reason for my faith in God and for my sexual ethic and beliefs. And so I see that in my clients now, of just this really confusing and disorienting faith deconstruction, or feeling like I kept my end of the bargain. Why didn't God keep his? Like, I've made good choices and maybe I did get married, but sex has been really frustrating and disappointing rather than pleasurable and mind-blowing like purity culture promised me.
Right.
Or I'm single and like I'm still waiting for the one that I was promised. So I think those are some of the ways I see it affecting people's faith.
So what are those promises that purity culture, like, you know, if you do, if you stay pure, if you guard men's sexuality, if you, then you will get what?
Well, then you'll get a wonderful Christian, loving, godly marriage and a godly spouse. And you know, many of my clients have found doesn't happen. Like, that's just not the case, whether they struggle in their marriage or whether they don't have a marriage. So even some people have commented when I've talked about this on social media, have said like, they heard it go so far as to, you will be blessed with children too. Like, you will be blessed with a family and you will be blessed with children. And I know family and role and relationship as a mother is has a huge emphasis in your faith tradition. Even more so, I think, than in evangelical Christianity. And so to not have that come true is devastating for women too, definitely. So those were some of the promises, and just that your sex life was going to be mind blowing. And all of the couples and the women that I work with, that has just not been the case. You know, they just can't flip the switch from sex is wrong and it's bad and it's sinful to all of a sudden sex is holy and wonderful and pleasurable. And they didn't have the sex education or the skills to really get there either, because it's not just something that comes naturally.
And that's part of the myth, right? It'll come naturally if you're pure.
Mm-hmm.
It'll sex will just be great naturally, right?
You
don't need education. You don't need anything. And that is not the case, at least in my practice.
No.
You know, that is, it's a skill, right?
Yes.
You need to know things. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a skill like anything in marriage, like communication. Like, right. Yeah, we all know how to talk, but like it's a skill to learn how to communicate your feelings and thoughts and intentions with another person and to understand them. Just like it's a skill to learn how to communicate what feels good sexually and what you want sexually and how to give and receive pleasure. So it's definitely something that takes a lot of communication and teamwork and doesn't come naturally right away.
And going from that, sex is bad. And also for women, I think the message, you're not sexual, like, because
mm-hmm.
you're guarding men's sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
You're not even sexual. And then it's like, now it's okay. And you can be sexual. It's like,
mm-hmm.
whoa.
Yeah.
Too much.
Yes. Sex is not for you. It's for the man's pleasure is kind of what we hear. Like, he's the one who's sexual. He has a need that you probably don't have. And so you really need to meet his needs, give of yourself to him and not really expect much in return. And so it sets the bar kind of low for women and also creates a lot of shame if they feel like they're not enjoying sex or maybe they're not performing in the way they think they should or not pleasing their husband or they're not in the mood for sex every day like they think they should be. And all of those, I think, are myths. And it's okay if you're not.
So what are some other myths
of purity
culture?
The one I haven't mentioned is the damaged goods myth. And that can be one of the most damaging myths. We've talked a lot about like shame and how it affects people who don't have premarital sex. But for people who do, there can be this huge sense of shame and that I'm damaged goods and that no one's going to want me, that I'm broken and irredeemable, or that I'm going to bring this damage to my marriage. Some of the messages was, well, if you have sex before marriage, like God can forgive you, but your sex life in marriage is going to be a struggle because you have this past, because you have these memories or these past experiences, you're going to have struggles and problems in your future marriage, which is not a guarantee, just like it's not a guarantee that if you don't have premarital sex, it's going to be wonderful. And of course, there's also the shame in the way that affects people who go through sexual trauma, who didn't choose that, who it was in no way their fault, but yet who bring pain and that area of hurt into a marriage and feel like they might be broken and damaged goods too because they're not pure or they're not virgins anymore. And so that's just very damaging and gives a lot of sense of shame and, like I said, irredeemable, which is not the message of my faith tradition, which is that we're saved by Jesus's sacrifice on the cross for us and that we receive his forgiveness and grace for our sins.
Yeah, it's so easy for faith traditions to take a good idea and then implement it in a way that's hurtful. I mean, I can think of a lot of examples
mm-hmm.
in my faith tradition as well, where it's like the idea that we should be modest, right? Like, and that in my faith tradition, so modest in the scriptures is usually about not flaunting wealth.
Mm-hmm.
But we've kind of defined it as this, what women wear and, you know, covering certain parts of your body because it will, you know, you don't want to provoke men's sexuality. Yeah. What are some other examples in your faith tradition of like good ideas that have kind of been implemented in ways that are damaging?
Gosh, there's so many. I can't
think
of one off the top of my head. Modesty is definitely one of them. And I agree with you there, Dr. Julie. Like when I talk about modesty, it's like more about humility and humbleness of heart and and not being boastful and arrogant and things like that, rather than what body parts are covered and how much skin is showing and things like that, especially for women. But as far as other things that are just really taken, I mean, I think purity is one of them. I think for people who still have that belief and that value, like that can be a beautiful thing to wait until you're married to have sex. That can be something special to be shared with your spouse and something that can be honoring to God and to yourself and your own values. But it's been warped into something where it becomes this transaction of, well, here, God, here's my purity. So where's my reward in return? Rather than something beautiful that we do to honor ourselves in God.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. So what are some tips for women to identify in their own lives the impact of purity culture? Like how, mm-hmm. so people who are watching this or listening to this, how would they identify in themselves? Like, oh my gosh, this is has its roots in purity culture.
Yeah. I would say look at those three areas, your relationships, particularly your marriage, if you're married, your sexuality and your faith, and think about ways, maybe problem areas in those three areas and how they might be connected to these teachings about purity. So if you're struggling with your sex life and your marriage, like, could some of that be because of these beliefs and teachings? So whenever a couple sees me for sexual issues, always want to rule out physical causes, like always want to assess, have them go see their doctor, you know, things like that, and assess any physical or health issues. And then you always want to look at the health of the relationship, like if there's conflict or there's trust issues or there's something like that, then that's obviously going to affect the sex life. But a lot of times, if those things are okay, then it could be these teachings that sex is bad and that you just are having trouble making that switch. So look at your sex life or your marriage or your faith and look and see, are there problems in these areas and could it be traced to the teachings of purity culture? Like, am I believing that God is just there to reward me for good behavior? And I'm expecting some sort of, yeah, reward for this and getting mad, or for me, like I got very prideful and like jealous towards my friends who were married, and I would get angry at God, like, where is my husband that I felt like I was promised. So those would be some examples. But what do you see in your faith tradition? Or maybe you were going to get to that later, but
what questions do you have for me? Because this is so fascinating. So much overlap.
I'm saying this about like feeling like it's a reward or like a false promise, like, is that a message that you here to? Yeah. And is there, like, is there any truth in that in your faith tradition, or do you agree that that's a myth?
So the teachings are be pure mm-hmm. until you're married, don't have sex, and don't have sexual experiences.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So then when because people are human and have sexual experiences, a lot of people do before they're married, then mm-hmm. there's that shame piece, right? But also along with purity is getting married in the temple, the Latter-day Saint temple. And so that is a religious ordinance that binds you together beyond this life. And so for young women, it's kind of taught just, you know, stay pure and get sealed in the temple. And then your fairy tale will happen. And you know, like you were saying, you will have children and you'll love being a mother. Mm-hmm. And you'll love being a wife. And mm-hmm. so kind of these unrealistic expectations. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of similarities in our faith traditions regarding purity. And mm-hmm. and like you're saying, I think the idea of waiting until marriage that's great. I chose that. Like, that's mm-hmm. what I chose. Mm-hmm. And 33 years later, it's like, okay, it's pretty good, you know. Mm-hmm. But I think that we need to teach, just like you were saying, we need to teach more. The Savior's sacrifice for us takes care of that. Like, you're still good. Like, it's okay. Your worth is not tied to your behavior. Yes. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, really common in my faith tradition, is to link performance or obedience to the commandments, or, you know, to being virtuous or pure. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Your worth is based on that, where it's like, that is not actual teachings.
Yeah, that's not actually biblical.
Right.
That your worth is in your works or your purity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. What other questions do you have for me about Latter-day Saint?
Oh, well, I have a few, or I have had over the years, a few therapy clients who are LDS, and it's always intrigued me, like, learning more about it. And I've learned so much from following you and a few of the others. I tagged them in my stories today, just a few other LDS members that I follow. And I did go to an LDS church one Sunday to see what it was like and to experience it with a friend when I was in grad school. So, yeah, I think the perfectionism I see, there's a huge emphasis on perfectionism and performance, it seems. Yeah. Even more so, again, than I think my faith tradition. And just a lot of, I can see how that would lead to a lot of guilt and shame if you feel like you fall short. And I struggle with that as a therapist, because when I'm trying to help people break that perfectionism, well, if your whole faith is based on the afterlife and
your behavior here,
and getting a reward in the afterlife because of that, then it's really hard to break that perfectionism. How have you found to do that in your work?
So with my Latter-day Saint clients, I've really worked hard to help people separate their performance from their worth, and also to redefine what the word perfect means in the scriptures. Mm-hmm. So in the Bible, be therefore perfect. Perfect means whole, ripe, and complete. It does not mean flawless. And somehow in our culture, we've defined it as being flawless, mm-hmm. when it just means whole, ripe, and complete in the love of Christ.
Right.
Which mm-hmm. is totally different than looking perfect, having perfect children, being perfectly obedient to God's commandments, right? Mm-hmm. So helping really understand, like, no, we've got this wrong, and it's hurting our mental health. Yeah. And I had to learn that myself. I grew up as a perfectionist and really hard on myself, really negative self-talk. And so I had to personally kind of untangle and go, wait, what is this about? You know, and learn more about grace. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. I went to an evangelical Christian school growing up.
So
I kind of, I got a lot of cultural messages from evangelical Christianity too. So I kind of have a little bit of a mixture. I was going to LDS church, but my school, you know, we had Bible study every day and went to chapel. And so I really think that evangelical Christianity has a much better handle on grace than mm-hmm. Latter-day Saints. Mm-hmm. I think we underestimate grace and overestimate works. And I think that we need to flip it around. Yeah. So I think those are some of the things that I've helped clients do. Also, another thing is focus on enjoying now. Heaven is now too. You can't just live for this distant reward. You have to enjoy your life now. Mm-hmm. And there's kind of this idealization of sacrifice, particularly for women, right? Like sacrifice for you'll get blessings in the next life if you sacrifice. Mm-hmm. And while that's true, and to have a family requires sacrifice, but mm-hmm. I think sometimes that gets taken overboard. And so kind of recognizing, no, like you're human, that and what you want matters. And yes, sacrifice is important. And that's part of becoming a disciple of Christ, but that doesn't mean sacrifice your whole identity and self and anything that you know, any interest that you have or things like that. So those are just some ways that I see my faith tradition in the therapy office.
Yeah. I love what you said about perfectionism, because I've heard that too, that word in the Bible doesn't mean, like you said, flawless or without fault, but it means whole, what did you say, and complete.
And ripe is another one that I think is really, like, ripe for, and that whole, I'm trying to remember what chapter it is in Matthew, mm-hmm. but it's talking about Christ's love. It's not mm-hmm. talking about our behavior. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, be loving like God, like be, yeah. and so that's like, give your heart to Christ and be loving. That's what that's about. It's not saying be flawless. And that's just such a relief to people, you know. Like, oh my gosh, we've got this wrong.
Yes. Yeah. I like that interpretation better. And I like what you said about sacrifice too. I think those messages are very much given to women in evangelical Christianity too. And I also live in the South, in the Southeast United States, which is pretty conservative when it comes to gender roles and some of these religious beliefs. And so women are just taught to really to shrink back and to, submit. To not have a voice, to submit and to be the helpmate and to be, just a lesser than role. And so that's what I speak out about egalitarianism, or you say it, equal partnership, is that we're equal. We're equal in value and in role. And we can both have a voice and a say in this marriage. And like, we practice mutual submission, meaning like we both can defer to each other, or we both can be influenced by each other and hear each other's point of view. And if I feel more strongly about something than my husband, he might defer to me, and vice versa. And so that's where it's mutual. It's not one-sided just because you're female submitting to the man. So,
yeah.
Yeah. So that's, that that's a very entrenched belief, just really entrenched in most evangelical Christians, and it sounds like in Latter-day Saints too.
Yeah, man as the head of the household, mm-hmm. or those kind of, and it's from Western culture, right? I mean, it's not just our faith traditions. We've inherited that from kind of the broader culture too. But I'm curious about the idealization of motherhood in your mm-hmm. faith tradition. Is mm-hmm. that kind of a thing?
Yeah. I think probably not as much. I'm trying to think. Like, it is sometimes that, like, women are built for the home. I've heard that before. The women are the homemakers and the caretakers and, like, responsible for the children. But men are meant to be the protectors and the providers. Yeah, so sometimes women can derive a lot of value from being mothers, but then finding that that's not always a fulfilling role, or it comes with its challenges and its frustrations. And I love how you speak out about that on social media, because it's especially helpful to hear from somebody who has a lot of experience as a mother. And I know your grandmother too, which shocked me when I found out when you shared that on social media. But yeah, it's good to hear from somebody who's been through raising kids and who can say, like, normalize it for us that motherhood is challenging and that you don't have to find all of your fulfillment in it, and that it's a relationship, not a role too. I heard you say that this week too. So
yeah,
so I think probably not as much, but definitely, like, in more conservative areas and, like, where I live, the region that I live, being a working mom with young kids is pretty rare. Like, I go to a church mom's group once a week on a day that I don't work because I'm in private practice. So, you know, I can make my own schedule. But I'm probably the only working mom in the whole group there's probably, I don't even know how many people there are in the group, 40, I don't know, something like that, 30, 40. The only one that traditionally works, you know, there might be some that.
Part-time.
I do different.
Flexible part-time.
And I have, and my kids are in childcare, and that's, I'm probably the only one who in full-time childcare. So, so sometimes there can be some cultural shame from our culture about that, like that you're not a good mom because you're working or because your kids are in childcare or because you find your main passion or fulfillment outside of the home, which is the case for me. But yeah, I've always just kind of had, I guess, a rebellious attitude towards that belief of, like, well, that's just not me. I always knew that that was not me. That was not going to be me. And I find a lot of freedom from being able to be both a mother and a professional and to thrive in both of those areas, but not want to give up one or the other.
Yeah. And I think that's another myth that is perpetuated in conservative religious communities, is that you have to pick one or the other. Oh, you have to be a working mom and or you have to be a stay-at-home mom, or don't have, you know, professional and don't have kids, like this real binary kind of thing, where I was like, well, I want all of it. So let's figure it out, you know?
So you've been married, did you say 33 years?
33 years.
Okay. Yeah. And you have
so long.
How many kids and grandkids?
I have four kids and three grandkids.
Three grandkids now. Okay.
Yeah. And you have two kids, right? A boy and a girl?
Yes, a boy and a girl. My boy's just 7 months old.
Oh my gosh.
And my daughter's almost four. Yeah. And I've been married a little over 6 years now. So yeah, it's still fairly new. And still, yeah, figuring that out. But I really find a lot of fulfillment in, like, I guess, forging my own path of, like, what is this going to look like in my marriage to have an equal partnership? And what is this going to look like for me as a working mom? And now what is this going to look like to balance? Like, I have my private practice, which is my main job, my main source of income. And then I also have this writing and speaking and coaching career that I'm doing that I'm really passionate about. So yeah, so just pursuing all of that and finding how that all fits with, like, who God's made me to be. And I guess the message that I feel like he's given me to share with people too.
Yeah. I could have said exactly what you just said.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm just a little bit farther down the road in age, you know?
Yeah.
But I feel the same way. I feel a calling in my heart to speak out about and educate about certain aspects. And I can't deny that. And I believe that's from God. And so I'm responsible for that, for whatever gifts or passions or talents that I have.
That's how I feel. I feel like like God has given me my children, and that is a responsibility to steward, but he's also given me the opportunity to have gotten my doctorate at a really young age. And that's a huge responsibility to steward. And he's also given me these strengths and these gifts and this message and mission. And I feel like I really want to speak to people who still want to hold on to their faith. Like there's a lot of criticism of purity culture now, and there's a lot of criticism of traditional gender roles and patriarchy, you know, on social media that you'll find. But a lot of people have left behind religion or left behind church and just kind of exploring like non-religious or not being affiliated with anything. And so I feel like I'm one to speak to people who still want to be Christian, like who still want to hold on to their faith and who still want to have a relationship with the church, but want to call the church to a higher standard of, we don't have to have these purity culture myths in order to still hold on to biblical sexuality. And we don't have to have a marriage that looks a certain way with a husband as the leader in order to have like a God honoring marriage. So,
yeah.
And it seems like you do that too. Like you speak
totally.
Right.
Let's do this thing healthier. Let's engage in our religious tradition in a way that is healthy and balanced, and where you have autonomy in like deciding what you believe and what you don't, and kind of taking responsibility for your own life within the faith tradition. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I totally relate with what you're saying. I think we're talking to similar groups in our mm-hmm. own faith traditions, which is why I followed you and really enjoyed. I'm like, oh yeah, she's doing the same thing, you know, like, uh-huh. And really, like, the teachings of Jesus Christ, like, I am totally behind. Like, I'll get behind that, you know? Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of other stuff that gets that infiltrates the culture that's the unhealthy part. And so let's kind of do better at sorting through that.
Yeah. Well, I say deconstruct the toxic cultures and the toxic beliefs, but reconstruct your faith. Keep your faith and keep Jesus at the center. But get rid of all the cultural stuff that was extra and outside of the Bible and outside of God's teaching. So, we're very much aligned when it comes to our mission and our audience. And I know you get a lot of criticism too. Like that's another part of when you're doing this work is I get criticism from both sides. Like I get called like that I people questioning my faith or that I'm not a Christian. Or that I'm teaching against the Bible when I talk about like submission being mutual, which who knew that that was such a like, you know, huge
revolutionary.
Yeah.
Like what?
Yeah. But then I also get criticism of like, well, how can you speak out against purity culture, but still say that like sex within marriage is God's best and what God wants for his followers. And, you know, but that's where I find myself. And that's where a lot of my clients really are too. And that's why they pick working with me, because they have other choices of purity culture coaches who aren't going to be as rooted in faith and wanting to help them hold on to that. So,
yeah.
And so I imagine you get criticism from both sides too.
Oh yeah. A lot. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I'm curious what you're doing differently with your children than was taught to you.
So much. So much. Yeah. Within the area of sexuality, we're definitely trying to make it more of an ongoing conversation and have more open conversations. Now, of course, my kids are very little right now, as I said. So, but the way I was taught about sex was like, here's a Christian book, you know, go and read it. And if you have any questions, come back. And of course I didn't, you know, like, of course I didn't have any questions after that. And my parents did have some good conversations with me about sexual values and purity and things like that, without like making it hugely shaming. So I have to give them credit for that. But yeah, like I think we want our children to just not have as much like secrecy and shame about sex or about their bodies. Like we're very open talking about their bodies. And of course, when I was pregnant, my daughter had a lot of questions then, and she was just so intrigued by it all. Like, you know, we build up these things to be so taboo in our minds as adults. But like, you know, I just told her, like, when she said, you know, how does he get out? Like, I was her baby brother, you know, how does he get out of your body? And I just said, he came out of my vagina. And she's like, okay. You know, so
right. She's, it's like, no big deal.
Yeah, and she was nonchalant about it. And for me, that I was quite proud of that, because my this second birth was a VBAC. My first one was a C-section. So that was a big deal for me, you know. And, but she was, yeah, just nonchalant about it. So I think being more open with them and giving them the critical thinking skills so that they can choose their own values and morals along the way. Like when I'm working with parents on how to teach their kids about sex, I say, like, you can give them, like, the basics of, like, their body, like, definitely give them good education about their body and about the mechanics of sex and things like that. You can also communicate your family's morals and beliefs, and but ultimately they're going to choose, like, ultimately they're going to choose, make choices about their sexuality and their sexual behavior, and that may or may not align with your values. So I think you're doing them a better service if you can give them the critical thinking skills to think through, what are my beliefs and values? And that comes from asking a lot of questions and listening, I think, more so than talking. So, yeah, so that's what I hope to do differently along the way.
I love it. Mm-hmm. I just want to say amen to that. That's exactly, it's like we have the same brain in some way. Like,
what's your Enneagram type? Do you know that?
3.
Oh, okay. That's cool. Mine's a 6. So.
Okay. I'm not even sure exactly what that means. I just took a test this week for a retreat. And so I'm like, okay, I'm a 3. I better figure out what that means. What's your Myers-Briggs type?
It's been a long time since I did that. I know. I think I was always in between an E and an I, you know, the introvert, extrovert. But I've always been an S. I think kind of between the T and the F too, and very much J. Like, very much into, like,
interesting, because we're on different pages with personalities. Okay. The passions seem to overlap really well.
Yeah. That's interesting. Are you more extroverted?
I'm really split, and the older I get, the more I need time away from people. So I think by nature I lean more toward extrovert. Like if I don't get my social interaction, I kind of wither. But I'm also, if I don't get my alone time, I kind of do too. So
yeah,
I'm split.
I kind of am too. Yeah. I think the older I've gotten, and when I went through graduate school, I definitely became more extroverted. I think when you're a therapist and you're constantly, like, listening and giving out of yourself, you kind of want to come inward at the end of the day. So yeah, that's what I found. But yeah, it's so interesting. I'm trying to think if I had other questions for you about your work and your faith tradition and stuff. But I love how you speak out about things and, you know, handle the criticism, it seems, quite well too, and have built such a huge following of people who need to hear this message and who trust your voice. So
thank you.
Yeah, that says a lot about you and how you lead with integrity, I think.
Thank you. I love and feel like I love people, and my heart is about helping people to be healthy and have awesome relationships, and and if at all possible, be able to stay in their faith tradition if that works for them. But it doesn't for everybody, and that's totally fine. I mean, I get accused of leading people out of the church, and I'm like, I don't have an agenda. That's not my agenda.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're
still a member of your church then?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think if people are going to be led out of it, it's come from something within, you know, that's just, they've gotten to the point where they can no longer stay. Like, they can no longer feel like they're living with integrity if they stay. And that might have been, like, maybe there was a seed planted along the way of something they saw on social media, but really it's a much bigger picture that's not just about you.
Right. And, like, I'm not that powerful. Trust me.
Yeah.
I'm not able to kind of, you know, control my children or anybody else. So I don't know how I can control somebody through social media. Yeah. So yeah, it's a little bit, it's wild, but you get accused of kind of crazy things. Yeah. What resource, like, are you open to working with Latter-day Saint clients for your purity culture coaching?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I would love to. Yeah. I would love to work with Latter-day Saints or ex Latter-day Saint clients.
Yeah.
Like, I have clients myself who are ex Christians, you know, who are no longer Christian. I welcome that, as, you know, we can align with helping them to deconstruct the harm of purity culture. And I work within their belief system of, yeah, what your beliefs and values are. And if someone wants to stay within their faith tradition, then we work within that. Yeah. So, yeah. I would love to continue. I continue to, you know, learn more about it from people like you and just my own like personal reading and learning. But yeah, I would love to work with coaching clients too.
Oh, well, I want to encourage anybody watching or listening to follow at Dr. Camden, C-A-M-D-E-N.
Yes.
On Instagram. And she has really great content, and it's applicable to so much of what people with a Latter-day Saint background have been through too. So there's so much overlap, which is that's why it's so fun to connect with you, because like we're doing the same kinds of things. So I want to encourage all of you to go follow her and just eat up her good content and consider having her coach you through this. And then next month in my membership group, we're talking all about purity culture and how to heal from that. And so if that interests you, please join my membership group for next month. Let's end with one question. I think this is really good. This question just came in. What's an easy way to explain purity culture to family who doesn't understand what it is?
I would say it's the way that the teachings of purity were taught. So it's more than just the belief and the teachings about abstinence before marriage. It's the way that it was taught. It's the methods that it was taught to you, and explain some of the harm from it. Explain some of the myths and the problems with it. But if family is like wary of like, does this mean that, you know, you no longer believe this, you know, see what areas you have in common with them and build on those, and then see if you can open their eyes to some of the harm and they can see that.
And I like the distinction that you made, Dr. Camden, that it's not the teachings that are harmful. It's the methods. It's the way that it's conveyed or taught that does the damage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's my belief.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can get behind that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me tonight. Mm-hmm. I think this is going to be so interesting and helpful to a lot of people. We're going to turn this into a podcast episode too, kind of a bonus episode. Awesome. So that'll be totally fun to have, you know, expose you to a wider audience. Of people with a Latter-day Saint background, generally, I have people all faiths or no faith that follow me, but a lot of Latter-day Saints. So thank you again.
Thank you. Okay. I wanted to say I have a quiz on my website called "Which Purity Culture Myth Affects You." So I should have mentioned that earlier, because you were saying how can people like figure out how purity culture has affected them. So that's one way. You take just 25 questions, and it basically will rank the five myths that I've named and identified and tell you which one you have the highest score on. And that shows you which one is still affecting you to this day. So that's a good way to get started on identifying the problems.
Yeah, that's a great resource. And that's at your website.
The
website name is?
DrCamden.com.
Well, have a great night. Thank you again for your time. I really appreciate it. And let's keep the conversation going. I love watching and seeing the good that you're doing in the world. So keep it up.
Yeah. Thank you for your support and your work and just this dialogue and being able to work together. I loved it.
Yes. Oh, thank you. Thanks again. Have a good night, everybody.
All right.
Thank you for listening to Ask Dr. Julie Hanks, a podcast helping real women seek solutions to life's biggest challenges. If you'd like to learn more, you can connect with me on social media at Dr. Julie Hanks and at drjuliehanks.com. where you'll find information about virtual groups, coaching, and online courses. For therapy services in Utah, visit WasatchFamilyTherapy.com. Have you ever thought, hey, I want to talk to Dr. Julie Hanks about this question? Well, now's your chance. I want to have you on my podcast. So email hello@drjuliehanks.com with your question and the reason why you want to be on the podcast. And we may just choose you for a free coaching session.